This is a Crowd podcast.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And you've just entered the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club.
Brought to you by Zwift, the indoor cycling app. Jump on your smart trainer and jump into Zwift.
Croeso, or welcome. Tom, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Geraint, too. How was your Christmas?
It was lovely, thanks, yeah. We were down in France in the sea on Christmas Day.
Nice.
You can go in the sea in Barry Island on Christmas Day, but it was slightly different vibe. And then Boxing Day, we drove up to the mountains and went sledging. So, yeah, quality Christmas. How about you?
It was nice, thanks. I'm just trying to think. I was going to ask you what your best present was, so I started thinking what my best present was. I can't remember a single present I got.
I got a nice pair of trainers.
For your running, so you can keep up with me next year.
Well, I've got two pairs of trainers, right, for running now. One in Monaco, one in Cardiff, because I was like, I'm going to do it. I forgot to bring both pairs with me when we left for Australia, Singapore. And we were in Singapore for a couple of days on the way to break up the journey. And I was like, oh, I could definitely get to the gym now. And I was like, oh, I've got no trainers. So I went out, bought a third pair. That's commitment. And I did two runs on treadmill, Tom.
Did you?
30 minutes, January the 1st, my first run of the winter. I said I was going to do it in October. Finally did it the 1st of Jan. And then the next day, I actually felt pretty good. I thought, you know what it's like, you start chasing numbers. So I started running at like 3 hour marathon pace. I only did half an hour, but I was like, that's a good start. Got a bit, I feel all right today. The next day then, the 2nd of Jan. So I was like, oh, I'll go and do another run when Max and Sarah have a little nap in the afternoon. Jump on, do 40 minutes, a bit slower, you know, just, you know, ticking over, you know, don't want to do any damage. Oh my God, the next day, I could barely walk. I was like walking through the airport, you know, flying to Adelaide, just like, I am in bits. Not good.
Well, I would like to say that I had a better sporting start to the year. I competed in a Northwest Cyclocross race on New Year's Eve, obviously in full team kit. And you know, I've had that issue before where either I start fast, but then I get overtaken by people, or alternatively, I start slowly, but then overtake people. What I did was I managed to combine the worst possible of those two options by starting slowly and still going backwards. There was one point, there was a very tricky, it was very muddy. There was a tricky sort of off camber chicane. And the first time I went round it, because I hadn't gone round it in the warm up lap, which was my own fault. The first time I went round it, I cornered, and it was probably the worst piece of cornering I've done in my life. And just as I was completing this terrible cornering, a bloke looked at the jersey and went, "Come on, GTCC." With the sort of tone of voice that combined encouragement and disgust. And as I slipped off down this off-camber hill, I just said to him, "I've disgraced the jersey, haven't I?"
Come on, GTCC. It's a bit like that. Come on.
It began like that. It was more, come on, GTCC.
I couldn't believe you didn't do a warm-up lap, Tom. Just, you know, fail to prepare to fail.
I know, I did sort of half a warm-up lap. I'm going to improve, G, as 2023 goes on. But listen, the year has started with a frankly massive announcement that has got a lot of our club members very worried, because the white Oakleys that feature in our club logo are only in our club logo. They are no longer on your face.
Yeah, sad times, isn't it? But it's retro. That's why I like to look at it. It's been retro for the last 5 years. But yeah, you know, things change. You've got to adapt. You know, embrace change is as good as a rest and all that jazz. But no, it is weird. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, that's what it is, Tom. Don't know what else to say.
It is. My main concern is, I mean, obviously, they make the old white ones made it incredibly easy to spot you at any point in a race. And on the rare days, like the day in the Tour last year when you decided to wear a different pair of shades, there was mass panic amongst your supporters because they thought you'd been dropped. I don't know if there's anything else you can do in races to make it easier for your supporters to find you. You know those recumbent bikes that you see sometimes, which have like a thin wire flag with a little strip of material, a little triangle of luminous material at the top? Could you stick one of those on the back of your bike?
Yeah, possibly. Maybe Eurosport could just give me a Zwift beacon above my head when I'm racing, you know?
Yes, that's nice.
Well, actually, Tom, I've got black frame glasses to start with, but today, in fact, I got my new pairs that I'm going to be racing with that are actually white. So, yeah, some a bit of good news for you there.
That is massive relief, not least to our member, Ridian Jones, who had actually emailed new sponsor Sun God to ask them to sort you out with a white pair. I think Sun God replied, so well done, Sun God. That is a massive relief. I was thinking we were going to have to change our logo. We don't have to. That is marvellous news.
And finally, before we get on to today's huge guest, and now I mean huge, we've got a big announcement, haven't we, Tom, for the GTCC at the start of 2023.
Yeah, we certainly have. Do me a little cheeky drum roll, will you, G, please? Cheeky little
drill.
Cheeky lawnmower, that was. Well, we are launching our first ever official GTCC membership, and it's going to be going on over on Patreon. Now, obviously, we know if you listen to the podcast, you're already in the club. So this is for anyone who fancies getting some shiny extras. For just £5 a month, you can become an official GTCC domestique.
Yes, we want people that are born team players. People who can set the pace, spot a breakaway from a mile off, and anyone who's an expert at keeping up morale. Also, our GTCC domestiques must make sure everyone is fed and watered too. That's crucial. A team is nothing without domestiques, so we want you.
Yeah, and in return for this extreme loyalty to the club, we are going to be giving you a lot of benefits. Right, G, let's go through them.
Monthly bonus content from me and Tom.
An annual discount code for the GTCC store.
Early access to news about live shows, merchandise, and all club business.
Get this, an exclusive ticket to one live online recording of the GTCC per season. Basically, you'll be able to watch live as Geraint butchers his introduction to our guests.
And a sparkly GTCC water bottle after 3 months of membership.
And finally, we'll give every GTCC domestique a shout out on the podcast. So if any of that takes your fancy and you want to join the team as an official GTCC domestique, just head to patreon.com/GTCC to sign up.
Right, let's get our first guest of 2023 on, shall we?
Let's do it. We all love coffee, don't we, G?
Never do this pod without one, Tom. Or a ride, actually.
Yeah, there is nothing better than a quick coffee for a cold winter ride or before hopping on Zwift. So, I know we'll both be delighted with the next sponsor of this podcast, Origin Coffee. Also, there is a cheeky discount code we've got for all our listeners. Origin Coffee are one of the leading brands on the coffee scene, and they get just how much cyclists love coffee.
And get this, Tom. Origin's director of coffee, Freda, is a 3 times UK cup tasting champion.
Not once, Geraint, not twice, but 3 times. That is pretty impressive. Would you like another great fact? All online orders are roasted and shipped the very same day. Super speedy, just how we like it on this podcast. They also have a rewards program, so customers like you and me can earn points and get cash back every time we shop online.
So why not try one of their delicious espresso blends? Or an interesting single origin coffee. There are so many profiles to try, and all the coffee comes in home compostable bags. So if you want to order some origin coffee and get a massive 30% off, just go to origincoffee.co.uk and use the code GTCC30 at checkout.
That's the code GTCC30 at checkout. Go and get yours today. Enjoy!
So, Tom, it's an easy intro for me to read out today, for once. Please welcome to GTCC, the current Tour de France champion, Jonas Vingegaard. Welcome, mate. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Just to make it clear, how do you pronounce second name? Vingegaard?
Now you have to learn Danish. It's Vingegaard.
Oh, Vingegaard. Okay, sorry.
Vingegaard.
And Jonas is Jonas, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. 50% right, anyway. But my lights have just gone off. One second, I'll put them on. Oh, they're coming back on. But yeah, you're looking good, mate. You're looking pretty trim. When I was in December after winning the tour, I certainly didn't look like you.
No, yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been actually quite a quite a good off season, just relaxed. Yeah, I mean, normally I also gain a few kilos and gain actually more than I do now, but the Swindra has been quite good for me. So yeah, all good here.
Yeah, so what did you get up to? What's the sort of craziest thing you've done since winning the tour?
Well, I mean, we went on a trip around the world for 1 month, basically. So after the season, we went on a vacation to the Maldives, and from there we went to Singapore for 10 days, and then further to Japan, and yeah, then back home. So it was actually like a good trip, but also a super long trip.
Yeah, one crazy thing I saw was the day you left the tour, I think you were flying back to Denmark, I think, and you had those fighter pilots, like, I think you might have been, you were on a private jet, I think, and you got these French or were they Danish? I don't know. But they were fighter pilots either side of you.
It was supposed to be a surprise for me, but then the pilot in the private jet said already to me that in 10 minutes, I think it was F-16 jets would be coming, and then I was... Super nice experience to see one on each side, and it was for me that was also a special day to be celebrated in Denmark, and yeah, the whole way of getting there, but yeah, just everything about it.
You probably do want a warning, G, don't you? If two fighter pilots, yeah, or if two fighter jets are going to appear either side of your plane, I think a little bit of advance warning probably goes down quite well.
I was going to say, yeah, it's probably a good thing he said that. Can you imagine just looking out your window and seeing like a fighter jet there and then the other side? Yeah, but. Yeah, I can't fault that. That's some way to travel home, isn't it?
Yeah, I was I was a bit surprised because I had nothing to do with it. And yeah, on the Tuesday after the tour, I was in Holland to do all to see all the sponsors and to meet them. And then the day after, I knew we had to fly home. But then the Danish the National Cycling Union, they arranged the private jet and. Even that in itself is quite a big experience. That was super nice. Just everything about that day was really incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine. Welsh Cycling, if you're listening, you know, private jet at some point. Just a little trip. Anywhere. You can go to Scotland for the day, whatever you want.
Yeah, it's nice. You can go. It doesn't take long. It's pretty easy. So, yeah.
Do you two want to compare homecomings? Because, Geraint, when you won the tour in 2018, you obviously had those pretty remarkable scenes in Cardiff, started down by the Parliament building, and then you rode all the way out, didn't you? St Mary Street up to the castle. Jonas, yours, if I can say this, G, without offending you, looked like an entirely different level. The scenes in Copenhagen, when you got home, were insane.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't think I ever saw so many people in one spot before, and Not only that one spot. I the whole way from the airport. I think it was 10K to that spot, and it was just full of people everywhere. And I made the mistake of starting to high five people on the way, and I think in the end my hand was also almost falling off.
What's the population of Denmark?
5.6 million, I think. Close to six, maybe above six.
About half the country came out then.
Yeah, it looks like it certainly. But I think also during the tour, I heard something that 1.6 million was just in those 3 days we were in Denmark, were on the route.
Yeah, that was incredible actually, the start. I think it was on a par with when he started in London or Yorkshire. You get such a boost from those home fans as well. And I remember on the start, maybe the first road stage, the whole crowd just started chanting Jonas, didn't they? Jonas, Jonas. And I think it was Jonas, wasn't it? Yeah, that's what they were shouting.
Yeah, or my last name. They also started shouting that. So that was...
Finger go.
Yeah, exactly. And then...
Nailed it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's just having the whole nation behind you. It just feels really incredible. For me, I think the most special moment for me was actually in Tivoli at the team presentation. Because it kind of came as a surprise for me. I thought it would be big, but still it just surprised me how big it was.
This is before the tour starts. This is the Grand Départ.
Yeah, exactly. So actually the team presentation on Wednesday, I think, that was for me so incredible. I mean, I knew it was going to be big, I heard that they would give away 25,000 tickets for it, but still, that there were so many people in there was just amazing.
Is that the place? Is a little theme park? It's got a few rides in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because Sarah and Max came out, my wife and son. They weren't allowed to see me in the end because the team, COVID and all this, they, you know, ultra cautious. So I wasn't allowed to see them. But they went to this theme park and Max actually got his head stuck in the railings. They had to stop the ride. Yeah, it was a big commotion, yeah.
Whoa.
So he's about okay. 15 minutes. All good. He just had to, instead of trying to pull his head back out, they just had to bring his whole body through. So
okay.
Yeah. But anyway, go off topic. But
sounds dramatic. Oh,
that's a bit different.
Yeah, I saw him on the podium. Then that's
of course. Yeah. He's got a big head like his dad. Yeah.
Yes, I saw he had. I think he only had one glass in his glasses, right?
Yeah, he just loved them. He loves wearing those glasses. He wants to put them on to look like me, and then the lenses pop out quite easily now. So yeah.
What about the night itself, Jonas? The night in Paris on the Sunday when you win the tour and you've been on the podium yourself. How was that? What did you get up to?
Yeah, that was, of course, also very, very special. I mean, I think for me, the most, in some kind of way, special moment is when you finish the time trial. And I guess you know the same, Jaron. It's like you actually realize that and now you won it, basically. And then, of course, in Paris, it's a lot of celebrating and just... Yeah, celebrating with the team, with the family, and we went to the Dutch embassy and had a nice dinner. And then just had a dinner with the whole team behind, and it was super cool. They had a barbecue, and so
lovely.
Not like partying all night, but just I think I went home at 12 or something, and then. I was also so tired that I was like, okay, I'm so tired. Maybe it's better to go to bed.
Sensible, to be honest. Yeah, I should have maybe thought of that. But but talking of the TT, you had a pretty scary moment in that on the descent where you kind of almost ran off the road. How was that? Like, what were they saying on the radio after that moment? Or what were you thinking? How were you feeling?
Yeah, it's funny because. Like before the time trial, I was obviously a bit nervous. Like, what if I have a bad day or something? You know, everything can happen. And then before I made the plan that instead of going easy in all the corners, I was gonna do normal, so not taking big risks. But then on the second last climb before, I just went so hard that basically after that I fucked up every corner, like all my lines. So. But I was still going with a good speed and I think the problem was that it was a bit bumpy, so I took the wrong line. But if the road wouldn't have been bumpy, I would have made it without any problems. But then because it was bumpy, it was really it made it even worse. And then I was close to the edge, and I remember the only thing they said in the car was good save. And then we had to go on.
You had your own twitchy moment, G, didn't you, in your own final time trial in 2018 down in the south west of France. It was a little bit rainy, wasn't it? I remember you almost losing your back wheel on a corner.
Yeah, it was in the French Basque country bit, Espelette, where the nice spice comes from. Always remember that just because of the spicy stuff. But yeah, into that corner, back wheel slid out. and then on the radio, they're kind of like, G, easy, just got to finish this stage, whatever. But then after that, it was almost like I forgot how to corner, and I was just going around these corners so slow and going around them like a 50 pence piece, you know, like rather than a nice smooth arc, I was just like,
yeah.
But it was, you had an even bigger advantage than what I had. And yeah, it was just about getting to the finish. But suddenly, once you just lose that sort of rhythm and that sort of, it's easier to just go full on sometimes and just forget about, because you overthink it then. So
yeah,
at least your moment was close to the finish, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And that was what I was thinking, that yeah, if you start cornering bad, you start thinking about it, then you overthink it, and then you lose easily 30 seconds in the corners. And then I was just thinking that I just start really hard, I just don't go slow in the corner, and then in the end Actually, at one point, maybe I should have made the switch and say, okay, on the last downhills, I go easy. I don't take any chances at all. But I couldn't make that switch anymore.
Shall we talk about stage 11 of the tour? Because that was a big day, Jonas, in a tour of big days. So the plan that your team hatched, had that been planned for a while? Did that come together the night before? Talk us through it.
Yeah, so we made the plan already in December, of course. We had the plan. We wanted to go with 2 liters, with me and Primoz. And then, yeah, basically the plan was that day to just go crazy, if you can say that. Now the both of us tried to be second in the tour. So I guess both of us were like, yeah, now we want to try to win it. And we would do everything that to try to, yeah, to beat the Tadej. And we said we wanted to make the plan that we wanted to go early on this stage, have satellite riders, and then just, yeah, make a good race of it. And I think we did. It was a nice day, special day.
Yeah, it was a lovely day. Yeah, thanks for that.
What were your thoughts, G, as you're watching all that unfold in front of you, Geraint? Because I think you were in third or fourth at that point? You were moving up the leaderboard, but you've been around road cycling long enough to know that was the sort of day when that sort of tactic was going to happen. So as you're watching it, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, you expect the worst and hope for the best when it comes to days like that. And we kind of expected something to kick off, but honestly, I didn't really expect that, because going up it was the Galibier, where you do the Telegraph first, you have a little descent and then you carry on up the Galibier, but it's just a massive climb basically. Then a big long descent, and then we do the Granon. And just over the Telegraph, like, I was just making sure I was in a decent position, and then I just see like Jumbo just going. Like, I don't know if Primoz attacked, or I think you were catching one of your, as you call it, satellite riders, one of the guys that had been in the break. I think you were just catching him. Can't remember who it was, maybe Benut or someone. But yeah, it was just like, well, we just got to go. We have to follow this. I can't just let all these go. So,
yeah.
I remember just sprinting, getting on the wheel, and then the guy behind me lost the wheel. Suddenly, I'm looking back, no one there. And there's 3 Jumbos, maybe? Like Primoz, Jonas.
And then.
And was it Benut?
No, it was Laporte. And he's.
Laporte.
I think he's one of the best downhillers in the world. So, he just went nuts in that downhill. Or, nah, for him, not. But,
super fast.
Yeah, exactly. And then we were with basically the 4 or 5 of us.
Yeah, and Tadej, obviously. And then we start climbing again. I'm basically thinking, this isn't good, because this is going to be hard. This is going to hurt, because I knew what was coming. And then basically, it was ridiculous. It was just basically like, in training, sometimes you might do some efforts like 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. And that's what it was. It was just like, Primoz would go full gas, Tadej sprinting after him, Jonas following Tadej. And I was just like this, well, just playing up to the old man character, I guess, just chugging away, just keeping going, like knowing that, but they're going to slow down, because once Tadej catches him, I don't think he's going to attack, and they're not going to ride together. So, and it was basically these lot just bang, bang, bang. And then I was just slowly coming back up every time. It's still having to spike a bit. It still hurts a lot, but yeah, and it was just going on for what felt like an eternity. And then eventually we kind of slowed down and the group behind sort of came back to us. But then Tadej started then. And I was just thinking, mate, this is just, in my head, I was thinking, this is I can't remember a day, especially when I've been in the tour, that was just so crazy like that. And by the time we got to the Galibier, the top of the Galibier, I think Tadej had done quite a bit on the front actually to get rid of all Jumbo bar Jonas. And in my head, I was thinking, that's a bad move. Because then me and Bardet were just off the back and I was just doing my thing, you know, just getting up it as smoothly as I could. And we came back, and then obviously a load of others come back and then hit the Granon then. I'm sure, Jonas, you can tell us what you were thinking, what you were planning up there.
Yeah, actually, basically from the moment we hit Granon, I was thinking to try to make it as hard as possible. And yeah, I mean, it is a beast of a climb, I think. It's really incredible hard. It's for me, I think it's one of the hardest climbs I've ever done as a Finnish climb. And we did the Rekon before, and I knew it already. And then, yeah, basically, I had no helpers in the end, so it was Micah pacing the Grand On. And then I think first it was Quintana attacking, and then he attacked like straight from the bottom, I think. But then with 5.5 to go, I think Bade went. And already there, I was feeling super, super good still. So I was thinking, okay, if I knew that it would be steep with like 4.5 or 5 to go. So I was thinking if they don't speed up, then basically I would try to attack.
I'm glad you're feeling good, mate, because if that was you on a bad day, holy shit.
Yeah, it's I think probably my best day ever on the bike, actually. So
as you say, we're no teammates, like having those guys as well to sort of use as a springboard, it was perfect. And as soon as you hit that steep bit, you just went. And yeah, it was surprising Tadej couldn't follow, could he?
Yeah, it's normally I think when he feels good, he just jumps directly on your wheel, and then you really have to try to ride him off the wheel. But and now he didn't even try to go after me, and I guess in that moment I knew that okay, this is basically my chance. And then yeah, for me it was just trying to push as hard as possible to the finish from there. And again, yeah, just really incredible. It was my first stage win of the tour, so that's also special.
Yeah, not a bad way to do it. Because I can remember just sitting on Tadej, I was like, right, I'm not going to help him. You know, he's the biggest threat. He's the favourite along with you. So I just remember sitting on him and thinking, whoa, for Tadej to be riding, it's not actually that hard. And I was thinking, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And then eventually I was like, right, well, I'm just going to go. I'm going to try then. And yeah, like he couldn't follow me either. And I don't get me wrong, I didn't feel sorry for him, but it's a hard moment, you know, like when you're a big, big favorite like his, and he was suffering, like he's obviously never suffered like that in a race before, and to be losing time like that. So I think I even put a couple of minutes into him, maybe, or a minute and a half or something. So an unbelievable day, really. And suddenly, I don't think anybody expected that, you know, going into that stage. If you had said this will be the results come the end of the day,
yeah,
I think everyone just laughed at you, really.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at that point, he also seemed so strong. I mean, like the days before, he won 2 days in a row in Longwy and La Planche de Belfi. And I mean, he seemed super strong. And yeah, it seemed like for some that he would not beatable, basically. But at least for us, we wanted to try, and we just had the spirit to go for it.
Even in the Roubaix stage, I can remember he was like, you know, he almost won that, didn't he? And to be honest, I was lucky that you were with me, actually, because after that crash where Caleb hit a hay bale, basically, I think that's what caused the crash, wasn't it? And Primoz came down, I came down. Did you crash or did you just have a mechanical or something? Or was it before that even?
You haven't seen it?
No.
Ah, then maybe you should search on YouTube for it. It's the most hilarious of thing of the year. I'm swapping bikes 5 times, I think.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, when there's like jumbo guys all over the place, and it's like that crazy music, like it's like what's going on?
Yeah.
There's that picture, isn't there? There's a still picture where there seems to be there's 3 Jumbo riders, and they're all doing totally different things. And unless you'd seen the stage, the picture makes no sense. Someone's looking over his shoulder. Someone's going that way. Someone's going that way.
Yeah, it's like afterwards, of course, we can laugh of it, but in the moment it was wasn't so funny for us. But I can tell that I just panicked. Like we had all these plans that if you have a puncture, if you have a crash, you break your bike. Yeah, then we swap bikes with this or that guy, and then I just dropped the chain, and then I just immediately thought, okay, I'm gonna swap bikes. And then who was behind me? There was nothing. And yeah, I think that was not doable. I couldn't even sit on the saddle and push the pedals. So then I had to swap bike again. Then I got the bike of Steven. And then while I got that one, the car came next to me. Then yeah, okay, then I better swap
with your spare bike.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then so I really made a mess there with the team.
It goes to show though how useful and how beneficial it is to have a strong team, because as I say, I was lucky you were behind, because Van Aert was incredible. Like, because you guys caught my group, my gears weren't working. They were just like jumping every like pedal stroke, and I just couldn't really do anything.
Yeah.
And I remember Van Aert and I think it was another teammate, maybe Laporte or somebody. Yeah,
yeah. Laporte as well.
Those two were just riding so fast, so strong, like closing the gap to the front and almost closed it to the, well, to the front by the end. So, well, I guess you owe him a pint or two after that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that was incredible. And yeah, Wout was in the yellow jersey, and basically he sacrificed his yellow jersey. I mean, he kept it afterwards, of course, but when he dropped back to me, we didn't know if I was gonna, or we were gonna catch back, and if he would still keep the jersey. So basically he sacrificed his yellow jersey for me, which I'm super, super grateful for. I mean, it's incredible that he wants to do that, and yeah, basically the whole team that day was really incredible. Also, Christoph was pulling for me, and yeah, basically everyone was just totally committed to the plan, and yeah, we had a lot of bad luck also with the crash of Primoz, and also in his group we had Nathan and Tish pulling, and we had a super strong team, and they all really tried to help us all the time.
On that moment on stage 11, just to go back to that for a second, Jonas, the point on the Granon where you dropped Tadej, right, for everyone watching on TV, that was incredibly dramatic because it was the first time most of us have seen Tadej crack. So for you in that moment, are you conscious of that, or are you just head down, you've seen he's dropped, and you're just trying to put as many seconds into him as you possibly can?
Yeah, I think actually it's just, for me, it was just about, I saw it and then I knew I was in really good shape, and then it was just about putting as many seconds into him as possible. So from there, basically it was just, I think 5K, so basically 20 minutes on the limit, pushing everything you can. And yeah, that was incredible for me also, just to, for me, it's I think it's my best performance ever. And like having it on such a day and at such an altitude is just, for me, super, super nice that I can do it there.
Yeah, I was going to say it's super high as well, isn't it? It's over 2,000 meters.
Yeah.
2.4, is it? Or?
Yeah, the finish was 2.4.
What were they saying on the team radio as you were going away?
I think like just keep pushing to the finish. So they didn't allow me to celebrate before. So yeah, basically it was going all the way to the finish and just trying to encourage me, telling me the split times, of course. But other than that, I can't really remember what they said actually, because I mean you're so focused, you just focus on pushing as hard as possible, and then yeah, of course we hear the split times.
And then so you put what, almost 3 minutes into Tadej that day, so suddenly you're defending the jersey rather than attacking it. How has that changed for you? How do you feel the next day and the day after, knowing that rather than doing the hunting, you are now the hunted?
Yeah, it's true. It's very different, of course. Now I wasn't the one who had to attack anymore. So some kind of way, it's also easier to follow, if you can say that. I mean, you do get a little bit of draft always. So it is easier to follow, I'd say. So, yeah, but it's also, it's very different because I think Tadej and I, we race differently. So, like, he's way more explosive, I think. So it makes it different. And yeah, still, you always have to think about what's best for me, of course, when we have the jersey. So
that was the biggest change for me, I think, when Jonas took the jersey. Just some of the starts, it was just bonkers. It's stuff like you'd never seen before. It's kind of like junior racing, or, you know, in like a smaller stage race when the team's not that strong and it's more man v man from would go. It was like that. Like, Pogacar's just attacking, like, after 5K up drags. And I was just sat there thinking, what is going on? And then Jonas is, like, going after him. And I was just like, well, again, just trying to think, like, well, hopefully they just kick each other's heads in here for another few days and then they completely blow up. Didn't happen. But yeah, I was just trying to like just follow the wheels and stay calm and just try and like stay near the front and just float there and not get drawn into all that, because it was incredible, Tom. Like, again, like that stage 11, I haven't seen anything like that. Like, first and second place just going at each other. I think it was maybe the stage that Matthews won to Mond when he was just going on for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And these two, like, I remember, like Matthew said, he was asking Van Aert, like, what's going on? Like, I remember asking Jonas as well, you happy with the break? And, yeah, we're happy with the break, but then still jumps going away. And that became a thing then in the tour. Every stage, I just roll up next to Vingegaard, next to Jonas after a few minutes after a break, it sort of looked like it was going, like, you happy with the break, mate?
Also in Croatia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a thing now, yeah.
Yeah.
You happy, mate? Yeah.
For now, I'm happy.
I mean, we talk about you competing against Tade, but to be fair to Geraint, he's never more dangerous than when he's 8 minutes down on GC. So, you know, you must have been concerned about him as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to think about everyone, of course. I mean, of course, I was mostly concerned about Tade, to be honest. But, I mean, I cannot let Geraint go in the GC. So Geraint also attacked a few times on the, I can't remember if it was the last mountain day or the second last. And I was also like, yeah, I don't want to let you go. So, you know, I don't want to let you up the road.
Yeah, of course. I was just hoping for a little stall from you guys, and everyone was banging on about me having an attack. So I was like, oh, gotta have a little attack at least just to see what happens. But I just knew, like, it was funny. We were at the dinner table that evening, and basically after a couple of minutes, Tom, like, Tade comes flying past me with Jonas in his wheel. I was like, oh, cheers, boy. Like, Tade had just attacked, like, using me as a launch pad, trying to get rid of Jonas. And we're at the dinner table, and Castro comes in, and he's laughing. He's like, oh, gee, they came past you so fast. Like, wetting himself. I was like, mate. Thanks for the morale. At least I was there. You were 15 minutes behind, just having some M&Ms, probably, you bastard. But it was insane then, Per, in that tour.
Yeah, it was. He has some really good attacks, actually. So he's very strong in the acceleration, and that's always like really have to get the elbows in and just try to follow, basically.
That reminds me. Do you remember on one stage when I don't know what stage it was. It was maybe the stage that had like the climb got really steep at the end, and then it was downhill maybe 20 odd K to the finish. I can't remember what stage it was now. And I remember like looking, and Tade sort of like drifted back and not really in his usual sort of place, and he didn't look as good. And I was chatting to a teammate, and I think Sepp Kuss, a teammate of Jonas, was next to, I think it was Castro I was talking to. I was like, he doesn't look good today. Like, Tade doesn't look good. And then Sepp was like, yeah, I don't think he looks great. Literally, like, a K later, he's attacking off the front. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I think he is. He's just as good.
Yeah, I think.
He's just playing.
I think Tade, you can never really read him. It's always hard to know how he feels. For me, it's also basically he's hard to read, I think. And sometimes it looks like he's... not good on that day, and then he wins the stage, and okay, then.
It seems like you were always in control, though. From where I was sitting, it looked like you were never really, obviously as hard, but it didn't look like you were ever under really any pressure where you were going to get dropped.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's always like super hard, and yeah, it's super tough to follow, but like dropping, I mean, yeah. It's very different, because could be that he would drop me, you know, and I think we are very different in our way of riding. So I think maybe with the acceleration he might be able, but like I think my advantage is on the longer climbs. So I was suffering a lot, of course. So
there seemed to be a lot of respect between you as well, Jonas. So on that final day in the mountains, the stage that finishes up the Hotacam. And obviously you both had a little wobble on a corner, and he went down and you waited for him. Was that just an instant decision? You just thought he's down and waiting?
Yeah, that was basically what my instinct said. He crashed. I said directly in the radio that, he crashed. I'll wait for him. For me, that was the right thing to do, and I'm glad I waited for him.
Yeah, definitely. That was good to see as well. Just that the sportsmanship as well. It would have been easy to take advantage of that, but... Again, you didn't really have to, because you had a decent time gap anyway. Maybe if it was only 10 seconds, you wouldn't have waited. But
yeah, I mean, it's
no, it was good.
It's
to
also
see.
Different. I wouldn't say different, but I mean, it's also he's the guy pushing, and now he crashed, and there was actually basically no consequence still. So he also didn't lose anything by pushing, and of course I also don't lose anything by waiting. So.
Who were you talking to, Yanis, when you got to the end of each stage and you're getting closer and closer to the end of the tour? And I'm sure the nerves were there. Was it your wife you were talking to at home? Because you often seem to go off straight after the stage finish, get on the rollers and be on the phone to someone. Was that your wife?
Yeah, that's my wife. She always supports me. She's a big support of me and or for me. So she really means everything, and she's always good at keeping me calm, keeping me on the right path. That's for me super nice to have her on the side, and she's always there for me.
And how was it when you saw her at the end? Because obviously, Geraint, you had that big emotional embrace with Saar after the time trial when you knew you had it in the bag. How was it for you, Yanis?
Yeah, I mean, it was also very, very emotional. She's the one I love the most, together with my daughter, of course. But just to have her there on the sideline when I won the yellow jersey is just incredible, and yeah, both of us were crying, and yeah, I mean, it's just so many emotions in the Tour de France, and I remember watching a interview also when G won, he was also crying. So I mean,
thanks for bringing that up. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it is just emotional, and it's like funny how sport can bring emotions in it.
Yeah, and it's a mad story you got, really, because I think a lot of people know you were working in a fish market,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, true. In a fish factory. So, yeah.
Fish
yeah.
factory. Until how old?
Basically, until I signed my first pro contract. So, I started in Jumbo in 19. So, in the summer 18, I was still working in the fish factory.
Wow, that's some rise.
That recently?
Fair play.
How quickly can you skin a fish then?
It goes quick because you just like we have machines for it, so you just cut off the tail, and then yeah, you put it through a machine, and then the skin is off.
Slightly different to racing a Col de Granon, smashing everyone, taking the yellow jersey.
Yeah, it's different, but it's also hard work, of course. And I think it in that way you at least I learned to work hard for the things I want.
And how's things now then? Is it still crazy busy, or you managed to be the old sort of life? Because I kind of saw it as two lives almost, like your pre-win, tour win, and then the post-win, which is just crazy and just everyone wants a piece of you. Although that does die down if you don't win it for 3 years. Everyone doesn't care less then, mate. But yeah, is it a bit more normality again? Are you able to just be a normal bike rider, or is it still hectic?
For me, it feels quite normal, I'd say. It's not like, of course, if you go somewhere and someone's on the bike and they see you, they follow you and ride next to you. But I mean, it's I have the feeling that it didn't really change. Of course, like directly the months after, it was a bit different, and yeah, it was a bit crazy. And as you said, everyone wanted a piece of it, and I have the feeling now it's a bit more calm. And yeah, of course, there's a little bit more duties to do, also with the team. With we do some content for the team. I'm asked for a bit more, I guess.
And do you spend most of your time in Denmark then, or are you out of the country more now?
No, so like this winter, I stayed in Denmark so far, but then yeah, basically, otherwise I'll stay in Spain for most of the winter actually.
Yeah, because that's the biggest thing I found. Like, you know, with Brad, he was in the UK a lot, and it just got a bit overwhelming for him. At least I kind of see the advantage of sort of living away, because at least you can sort of knuckle down and do your day job then most of the time, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But somehow I get the impression it's not going to affect you much anyway. You're just going to be just as strong come the tour in 2023 anyway.
Yeah, I hope so.
Gee, what would your advice be for Yanis as a man who went back the year after he won the tour and you finished second?
Well, I think just generally what I just said about, you know, trying to get back to that normal life again, normal training routine, and just being a bike rider again, because it can be so hectic. And For me, like the running for the tour in 19 was pretty terrible, really, to be honest. Like I didn't finish Tirreno, I was sick. And then Swiss, I got taken out and cut my eye, so the doctor stopped me getting back on the bike because I'd cut my head. So I only did one uphill finish in Romandy. I think I might finish third there, but yeah, only raced the top of a climb once before going to the tour. So, but then, yeah, I was still able to get in decent enough shape to be in with a shout of winning. So I think Jonas is better than me. He's a bit more. I think he'll be all right. I don't need to give him too much advice.
Well, thanks.
Here's one more question, G, actually, is as someone who's won the tour, talking to someone else who's won the tour, how would you put Jonas's win into context? Because you saw it, you were there, you had an amazing seat all the way through. What do you think about that ride now?
Well, I think just the whole tour in general was just so entertaining, like so much going off. You know, Van Aert just doing his crazy things, and just the style of racing has changed a lot since this century, probably. You know, like even, yeah, the start in the early 2000s, it was really controlled, wasn't it? And then obviously Sky was a similar way of trying to control the race. Whereas this time, yeah, Jumbo definitely don't just ride on the front and just control it and shut the race down. They kind of let the racing happen and jumping around themselves, as we've already said. And then just to see, you know, Tadej, who's supposed to, you know, going to be the smash the number of victories of the tour and going to dominate the sport, and then suddenly Jonas comes along and smashes him basically. And it was yeah, incredible, really, just from the way they rode as a team for a start, Jumbo, and how composed Jonas was all the way through, and yeah, how strong he was when he actually went on Granon and on Hotacam. It was impressive. So yeah, a great win. Yeah, not much I can say, really.
Thanks. It's a big word.
I've got one final question for you, Jonas, and this reflects both the job that you used to do when you were coming through into cycling and where you're from. People who go to Denmark, and particularly go to Copenhagen, will always try and try a fish dish. But there seem to be about a million different fish dishes to try when you go to Copenhagen. So if G and I were to come to your homeland, what should we try?
Good question. I wouldn't say fish, actually. I would say the... we call it a frikadella. It's like a really Danish, Danish meal. It's meatballs. You cook on the pan, and then, yeah, you have potatoes and sauce with it, basically. And it's, yeah, everyone in Denmark eats it, and it's super nice. I like it.
Sounds great. We'll have that, Tom. Well, you can have the potatoes because Tom's a veggie, and I'll just smash the meatballs. Ah,
that's a deal.
Perfect.
We've actually got a Danish bakery around the corner from our house in Cardiff.
Oh, yeah?
Brod, is that how you say it?
Brod.
With B-R-O with the line through it?
Yes,
D?
You say Brod.
Brod. Brod.
Brod. You don't say the D.
Brod.
Brod.
Brod. Brod.
Almost.
Brod. Brod.
Brod.
Anyway, it's amazing. They got some amazing stuff, so yeah, I might have to make a trip to Denmark just to yeah.
I think so.
Have some more pastries and some meatballs.
Sounds good.
Well, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on. Been amazing having you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me in the show.
Nice one. Thank you very much.
Gee, I am delighted to announce that we have got Momentous back on board as a sponsor for Series 3 of the GTCC. Momentous, a little bit like UG, are dedicated to optimizing both the mind and body, and they're leading the way for high performance seekers at all levels. Right, so for those not familiar with Momentous, G, tell us all about their flagship product.
Yeah, so PR lotion is something I've used on my body for years, Tom. It basically delivers bicarb directly to your muscles via your skin and bypasses the gut, which I don't know if you've ever drunk bicarb, Tom, but that's a big plus. The best time to use it, I find, is an hour and a half before your workout on Zwift or out on the road or whatever you're doing. And it's not too sticky either. It doesn't get stuck in your hairs if you've forgotten to shave. And it definitely helps me train harder.
All of this is true, G. It is actually scientifically proven to improve performance and decrease muscle soreness, and helps you make all those training goals.
If you want to get your hands on some PR lotion, Momentous are giving GTCC members, that's you listening right now, yes you, 25% off. Give them the code G.
Just head over to prlotion.com and use the code GTCC2022 to get 25% off today. Enjoy.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tom, Zwift are back for their third season sponsoring the GTCC.
Which means our Wednesday 6pm group rides continue.
Exactly. Just hop on your trainer, open up the Zwift app and join the group ride. You get to ride alongside us, all our club members and wear the in-game GTCC jersey. And if you're new to Zwift, just go to Zwift.com to start your free trial today. During this season of the pod, we're going to be walking you through all the new stuff we've been trying out on the app. Just think of us as your testing team. So Chairman Tom, what have you been trying this week?
Well, gee, I've got some big news from Zwift HQ. Zwift have released their first ever smart trainer called the Zwift Hub. Right, you might wonder why we're only mentioning this now. Well, it was so popular, it kept selling out. But Zwift are fully stocked now and ready for the peak indoor season. It's £449 or $449 / euros for our friends in Europe and the US. And at that price, it is serious value for money. It's a direct drive smart trainer, so it comes with everything you'd expect, like smart resistance and a built-in power meter. Plus, it comes with your recipients or your choice of cassette pre-installed. That is serious business, so there will be no tears on Christmas Day.
Just head over to Zwift.com to grab yours now. And don't forget to join us this Wednesday at 6pm UK time for our club ride. Come and have a chat and get your winter training in. See you there.
Right, G, it is time for any other business now, and I think we'll start the year with a lovely question for you. Sarah Wynne has got in touch to ask, have you ever been sick in your mouth during a race?
I have actually, yeah. A few times in the earlier days when I was like not so used to having gels and overdid the gels. Yeah, a bit of sick in my mouth, but it's not too bad. I think weeing yourself is probably a bit worse, isn't it? I've done that a couple of times as well.
What is your tactic when you do a little bit of sick in your mouth? Do you just swallow it or do you spit it out?
I swallow it normally, yeah. Maybe I should just spit it out. But then, you know, it could have a bit of gel in. I might need that bit of gel for, you know, the last 200 metres.
That gel could make all the difference.
Yeah, so even flies, even if I eat the odd fly, I'm like, ah, it's all right, a bit of protein.
That's the spirit. Here is a slightly nicer question for you from Chad. And Chad would like to know, is there ever a team at a race that has rest day food that you get a little bit jealous of?
To be honest, I'm not even saying this now, but our chefs are amazing. So, and we eat on the kitchen truck most of the time, so we don't see other teams' food. But I would say a lot of teams would be jealous of us for those boys cooking. But one thing you do get a bit jealous of is if you see them having a barbie or something, you know, on a rest day, and like, oh, look at them having a barbie there. That would be nice now. But then we go to our kitchen truck and the food's cracking anyway, so no, they're good. Even the last day of like a grand tour when they do burgers and everything, and do some nice dessert, tiramisu or chocolate fondant, or bloody lovely. Getting hungry now, Tom.
What is the single best meal you've ever had prepared for you by a team chef?
I can't think of one, but as a block, it was when we had a training camp in Isla in like full-on COVID times in like June, July 2020. There was only four of us and a chef and Tim Kerrison, the coach. And it was proper, small little group of us. And it was James, the chef. And it was incredible, the stuff he was making there. He was allowed to just be a bit more flamboyant, shall we say, with the sodium and the fats and all this and that. And, mate, it was so good. He's good at his all. He likes his Asian sort of style. So, and spicy stuff as well. So right up my street, that was.
Sounds tremendous. Shall we finish with some shout-outs?
Yes. So first shout-out goes to Graham Crawford, who gave G's, mine, Zwift workout a go. He says, it was tough. Kudos to the boss man, as that was a great test. Cheers, Graham. Graham also posted about a Boxing Day ride in a blizzard in -5 degrees. So I think he's pretty hardcore or mental.
I think, G, a shout out is due to every single GTCC member who got out and about on their bike on New Year's Day. So we had a mix of road riding across the globe and Zwift. So well done to the following. To Neil Gray, to Cycling Trucker, to @Jelly86, Susan Dingle, Peter and Joe Young, Rauno Vilberg, who rode at midnight in Tallinn, which is probably very, very cold. To Matt Woodward, Adrian Dorrell, Paul Felton and Sarah Watmore, Chris Gams, Danny Gentili, Stephen Spencer, Pierre and Fiona Mundell, and Jeff Lewis.
And finally, a reminder to go and check out our GTCC Patreon page if you'd like to become an official GTCC domestique and get access to loads of extra benefits, including an annual discount code for the GTCC store. See you next time.
See you then.
That was the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club. Thanks to Club Secretary Louise Gwilliam, Heads of Music Emma Hickman and Frank Beecher, Head of Social Archie Biltcliffe, and our Honorary President Mike Carr. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Ciao, ciao.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.